Okay, the Blue Jays have had some pretty damn good closers through their history, you know? You think back to guys like Henke and Ward. Billy Koch had a luck. Billy Koch could hit 100 sneezing. Even B.J. Ryan, a guy that everybody picks on. B.J. Ryan had a couple of decent years for the Blue Jays. Of course, we know about Roberto Osuna. We know the good and bad about Roberto Osuna. But Kevin Barker, I was kind of surprised to find out today, courtesy of our friends at Sportsnet Stats and the Toronto Blue Jays, that Julian Merriweather became the first pitcher yesterday in Blue Jays history to strike out the side for an opening day save. The Jays winning 3-2, Julian Merriweather striking out Aaron Hicks, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gleyber Torres, 99-99. It came close to an immaculate inning. We talked about this on Blue Jays talk after the game, but I think we need to go back and revisit it a bit, because revisit Julian Merriweather a bit, I should say. And we'll be joined by Ross Atkins, general manager of the Jays, in a few minutes. Jays have today off. They're back at it with the Yankees tomorrow. But Ross made an interesting point today in the media availability he did about an hour ago, talking about Julian Merriweather and talking about the closer's position. And he reinforced the idea that ultimately, in a perfect world, you would like to be able to say, this guy's our closer. You'd like to be able to identify guys being your closer and then, essentially manage the game backwards, as John Gibbons used to talk about doing. And he did not say that Julian Merriweather is the Blue Jays closer. He essentially said, look, between Dolis, Merriweather, and Jordan Romano, there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching. And he didn't mention Ryan Barucki. We might be able to throw him in the mix. Let me ask you this, though. We know that Kirby Yates is done for the year. Is there a door, do you think, or is there a pathway, do you think, Kevin Barker, for Julian Merriweather to be the closer for the Toronto Blue Jays? Period. End of paragraph. Jordan Romano, Dolis, they're your setup guys. Merriweather's the guy you come in to shut the door.
No.
There you go.
Happy overreact Friday. Look, what did we see last year when he was here? Think back to the Julian Merriweather that you saw on the mound that was 96 with a changeup that was somewhere in the 81, 82 mile an hour range with a little floppy breaking ball with a halfway decent slider.
What is a floppy breaking
like
ball?
It's almost like he's aiming it. Like, okay. I know I want it to go there and I have to really get it out front. And it's almost like when he throws it, you can actually see him thinking about doing that. So that's sort of what a floppy, right. And it looks like it's got a big hook in it. It doesn't have that late bite.
So it looks like, here we are, this is a breaking ball.
That's it, and the reaction to the hitter's like, that's a floppy breaking ball. I saw it out of the hand. Right. I'm not going to swing at that. And if you hang it, it's going to go a long way. I think if you saw the 99 with the 79-mile-an-hour changeup, the deception that he gives you from where he's standing on the rubber – yesterday, think about where he was standing so far on the first base side of the rubber that really his toes were the only thing that was keeping it legal.
Yeah, okay.
He's doing that is he wants that tunnel. When he releases the ball, he's 6'4". He has a giant wingspan. He's almost just dropping the ball in the catcher's glove because he's releasing the ball so close to the catcher. At least that's what it looks like. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing something that's odd. Hitters don't see that all the time, that they have to change their eyes now almost all the way over to right center to think about, now I'm looking way over there, and the ball has that sideward tunneling. It's coming out of his hand. It almost looks like it's taking a turn signal right into the righties, away to the lefties. It's really not doing that. But deception-wise, because of where he's standing and where he releases it from, it looks that way, and that's why you saw on top of it, he was saying in his Zoom call, it's the adrenaline coming out of the bullpen. We hear Ryan Barucki talk about that all the time because, I used to throw 93. Now I throw 97 because eighth inning, here I come. I'm going to run out there and let it eat as much as I possibly can, as quick as I possibly can. Is he a closer? He barely made the team. To think that we are now saying that you don't want Jordan Romano because he had trouble throwing his slider yesterday for strikes. You know, Jordan Romano's got the get me over, got the hard one, and then he's across his body with 97 to 99 with a fastball. It's Yankee Stadium with fans in it. They haven't seen that in a while. Jordan Romano's a young guy. You know, he's fired up. If you're picking a guy out of those three guys,
right? Saturday's game, you need a guy to close out the game. You're going with Romano.
With the middle of the order up.
If everything goes, you know, if you get something out of Stripling and everything goes according to well.
Okay, if the middle of the order's up in the eighth inning, Jordan Romano's pitching the eighth inning. So if the middle of the order's up in the ninth inning, Jordan Romano's pitching the ninth inning.
Fair. All right.
It's about matchups. For us to come on here and say that just because we saw big, tall Julian Merriweather throwing 99 and making Carlos Stanton being booed in Yankee Stadium because he's taking some weird swings.
All I said is there a pathway?
I didn't overreact.
I said, is there a pathway to him becoming the closer?
Now, are you excited that he could be a hybrid and pitch anywhere you wanted him to pitch?
I don't want that.
Is he a starter?
No.
Can he pitch the first two innings?
I don't.
Can he pitch where he pitched yesterday? Could he pitch in the sixth inning with the bases loaded and two outs? That's what I'm saying. That's a hybrid. And he even said that in his Zoom. A lot of the guys in the bullpen, most of them, from the first inning have to be ready. There's no more that, you know, Bob Wickman, when I played, was strolling down to the bullpen. He'd walk right by me at first in Milwaukee, you know, in the seventh inning stretch, waving at me, going, I'm going to the bullpen. Ain't no more of that. It's everybody is going to the bullpen.
Yeah, you know,
before the game starts.
You don't get Lee Smith sleeping in the trainer's room for five innings.
No, but Bob Wickman, remember, had the cutoff finger.
I do remember. He really did have a split finger.
He sure did. Times have changed. Is he a breath of fresh air? Could he continue to throw 99 with the big difference in the arm speed and the changeup and how hard he throws?
Do you think he could get by with just two pitches?
I do. I like the slider because he's a grip it and rip it guy for me. He's not a finesse guy. And the curveball's more of you got to feel it rolling off the fingers. Right. I can grip a slider and throw it as hard as I can. I can grip my four-seamer and throw it hard as I can. I can put that changeup, bury it in the palm of my hand, circle it up, and chuck that thing as hard as I can. As long as it looks exactly like my arm speed on my fastball. 96 last year is not 99 this year. That's my point. You add 3 miles an hour, and if he can contain that and continue to throw that 99, yeah, I like him anywhere you throw him.
All right, let's back it up a little bit because this is also something that I found intriguing with Rafael Dolis. And we talked about how the key to what the Rays did last year and what the Rays are going to try to do this year is they give you different stuff out of the bullpen, right? They got guys throwing from between their legs and above their head, you know, and
all. They won 1-0 yesterday, Jeff. That is must watch.
I will tell
baseball.
You, man, that was never in doubt. That game was never in doubt. You guys are going to
use 12 pitchers and win 1-0 on a homer.
You keep laughing. Let's talk in a month when we're raising up. You know, we'll talk about
overreact.
It anyhow, but between Romano, Dolis, and Merriweather, does that make Dolis a splitter even more effective? The fact that you're throwing those three guys out there. You know, you've got Romano, and then you got Merriweather. I'm trying to figure out how you would use it. I understand you want to use Jordan Romano in your leverage situation, which is why I think we saw Jordan Romano up when he was up yesterday, right? Because he knew the meat of the order's coming up. Okay, I get all that. But could you see a way that you could maybe fiddle around with Dolis, Romano, and Merriweather and make that splitter even more effective? Because you're seeing, or am I overthinking it?
I think his sinker, we were watching yesterday, and the first thing you said to me is, wow, look at the sinker moving. It moves a solid foot.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I watch him, and I was watching him against two specific at-bats in the eighth inning, that's Giancarlo Stanton at-bat and the Gleyber Torres bat.
Yep.
If you watch when he totes the rubber, you know, he does his little flipping the coin, and he ain't no hurry, and it's going to happen when I – I really do. I've never asked him, and I've never asked Pete Walker, and I've never asked anybody around him. But me watching him as much as I've watched, I think it's on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
And if you watch when he takes the rubber, he will wait till the batter comes into the batter's box, sets up like Giancarlo Stanton. You know, he's 9 feet tall, and he does his little lay it on the shoulder and bounce it. And then he looks out at the pitcher, and he's standing there. Dolis yesterday got on the rubber, got his sign, and just stood there and let him bounce it and 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 then throw it. And then he'll get the ball and walk around the mound. It's tempo. What's the purpose of a pitcher? To disrupt timing and rhythm at the plate from a hitter. He does that on purpose. So on top of doing that and letting the hitter get very stationary, you know, the more stationary you are, the less rhythm you have, the more you can, you know, your fast twitch muscles don't work as well. You want to just basically step in the batter's box, get it and go. You know, I'm with you and I got rhythm and everything's working the way it should work. Dolis slows everything down. And he basically is boring you into those weird swings on the splitty. I'm not saying the splitty's not great. And I'm not saying that 96 sink is not great. But you add those two pitches to the tempo that he gives you. He throws strike one because now after strike one, you have to respect the movement on the sinker and the splitty that looks like the sinker. He's going to be real hard to hit.
Give you a little bit of news today. The Washington Nationals and the New York Mets, you know that their game was postponed yesterday as a result of a positive COVID-19 outbreak and contact tracing involving the Washington Nationals. Major League Baseball just announcing a while ago that series has now been canceled. So the Nationals and Mets, who were scheduled to play 3 games this weekend, that series has been canceled. There will not be any games between the Nationals and the Mets this weekend. And we'll talk about that a little bit more on Writer's Block right after the show. But that series has been canceled. And elsewhere around baseball, we'll talk later. We'll talk later in the show about what happened in that Dodgers Rockies game. We'll have a little bit of fun with it, with the home run single, whatever the hell it was. And you got and it's a teachable moment for young baseball players and for people who coach baseball. And Barker will tell you why, because there's a very simple rule. There's a very simple rule to follow. If you're my age and played baseball, your coach probably said it to you at some point. Now, if you're 12 years old, you were probably looking in the stands and going, oh, that's blonde. So you probably didn't pay any attention to it. But
yeah,
we'll talk about it.
You run the bases, right?
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about that later on. As we mentioned, Ross Atkins joining us. The Jays have today off. They're back at it tomorrow against the Yankees. Anything else? Now that we've had some time to think about what we saw yesterday, I know you scribbled down. You got a whole page full of thoughts there. You got a whole page full of stuff. Give me your top two things we didn't talk about yesterday.
Top two things
that we didn't have time to talk about. Maybe Merriweather
was the big one. The defense was the second one with the pre-pitch setups. I say those things because you have a second baseman playing out of position. You have a shortstop trying to make himself into a great shortstop. You have a third baseman learning how to play third base. You have a first baseman who's lost a ton of weight, who's learning how to stay on the balls of his feet, use, you know, rhythm and timing around the bag and his footwork and learning how to work from the ground up on picks and these kind of things. So we've talked about the defense. The throwing, that's, you know, going to be one of those things that you're really going to pick apart when Kevin Biggio, can he follow his throw? The little, you know, the arm, different arm angles he's going to have to use, which way his body is going, throwing a ball a different way. Where do you aim to? You don't aim at the target. You got to get it a little bit of that hook going into Vladdy or Rowdy Tellez. There's a lot of things going on with just, you know, with where the rotation's at. There's not going to be a ton of strikeouts. Right. Just not. The bullpen looks like they got some power, and they're going to run it at you. So you're going to get a relief there. But the rotation, they're going to have to catch balls that they should have. So that's a big plus.
All right, let me ask you this as a first baseman, as a former first baseman. You've detailed how the Blue Jays have what they're trying to make work defensively this year. And I think we talked yesterday about how good that team was defensively. And I'm not going to ask you to get inside Kevin Biggio or Marcus Semien's head. But look, these guys know that Vladdy is not the finished product at first base. They're aware of that. From playing the game, ball is hit to Kevin Biggio. Is he thinking, I got to do this because I got a guy at first base who maybe isn't going to be as good as first baseman I might normally see? Like, in other words, Rowdy Tellez is at first. It's Kevin Biggio, he gets a ball hit to him. Now we know Rowdy's played first base. Is he more comfortable throwing to Rowdy than Vladdy? Or is, as an infielder, do you just, you can't think about that?
If he's thinking about all that, he shouldn't be playing third.
All right.
That's Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s problem. You know, that's his job to go and work on, you know, a wider base, learning which way to use your glove, you know, when to more cup your glove, when to turn it over, when to attack a ball that's in between you. They realize that Vladdy's not, you know, 100% comfortable at first base. He's still learning footwork and, you know, even which way to stride towards a ball that's in between. How do you attack an in-between ball? How do you attack a long hot ball? It's different ways you use your body to protect and not let it pass you on a big hot ball. On an in-between ball, those are a lot of luck. It's more mechanical, and you're just trying to work from ground up. And it's a lot of, if I time this just right, what? I put myself in a good opportunity to pick it. Things are a lot of luck.
What's going to be the hardest play for Vladdy? Throwing across the runner or?
I know it was for me and for most new first basemen, it's the ball that the pitcher has to cover first base. So say Vladdy backhands a ball from a left-handed hitter and he's deep and a little bit over in the first base hole towards the second baseman. He backhands that. Pitcher comes running over. You can't lob that throw. You can't really lead the pitcher. Mm-hmm. That's a very hard thing.
You're not throwing
thing.
A football pass.
No, you got a little small window. It was almost like Cecil Cooper used to always tell me, aim when you see the pitcher running and he's got the, and you can see his glove when it's, you know, it's when you run, your hands are mm-hmm. like, it's like hip to ear. Hip to ear. When you're seeing the glove come up, aim for the glove. Don't aim it like don't aim out in front of him and put a little something on it. Because if you lob it, he's going to outrun the baseball. So you want to catch it in the backhand and you're trying to throw that and aim flat footed. That'll be the easiest throw. Now, is that going to happen a ton? Probably not because of the shift and how they put the second baseman where they put him. Vladdy, 99% of the time, is probably going to be the guy covering first. Mm-hmm. But it will be that, do I throw it or can I catch it, run, and sort of underhand it to the pitcher, which is not the easiest thing to do either. There's little things.
Is there also, you know, you're big about body language when it comes to Vladdy. I'm going to ask you this because, again, Vladdy's at first base. Do you like what you see of him in terms of instilling confidence in his teammates?
I told you, if he's raking, he will be one of the best third basemen in baseball.
First baseman.
Yeah. What'd I say?
Third baseman.
First baseman. It'll just carry over. He won't be worrying about anything. He's a hitter first. And then I'm going to go out there and catch the balls I hope I should catch. You're not asking him to be, you know, JT Snow over there.
Yeah,
you're just asking him to catch the balls he's supposed to catch. And if somebody throws one in the dirt, pick him most of the time. And if he does that and he's hitting 25 homers and driving in 80-plus runs and hitting 114-mile-an-hour line drives as a center fielder, do you think anybody cares? You know, and hopefully he doesn't miss a pop-up in Boston because the wind's blowing and he really doesn't know how to run from his position because of the foul territory. There's just little things in all these little ballparks that he learned, hopefully, last year that he can take into – this year and be more comfortable. But he's a hitter first guy. He's raking. He won't have to worry about his defense.
Ross Atkins is general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. We mentioned the Jays have today off. They will resume their 3-game series in the Bronx tomorrow against the Yankees. Ross Atkins is next. This is Baseball Central. There is baseball right now. We're watching it. Actually, it's on the MLB Network. It is Baltimore and Boston. How can you tell I'm jonesing for baseball? Because second day and I'm actually watching the Baltimore.
I wonder if JD Martinez is crying about not being able to watch his at bats.
You can do it now.
I know that, but that's...
You can have access to a certain amount of video now that you couldn't have last year. Hey, listen, I kind of bought into that.
You did?
I think a lot of guys used... I don't think you can go cold turkey in a sport like baseball, Kevin. I don't think you can just go, this is what we're doing, and boom, we're not going to do that anymore. I don't think you can.
I hit 300 homers and couldn't tell you what one of my bats looked like. Not a chance. I was back-legging and down and through it and big finish and hold it and take your picture. Yep. Couldn't tell you what any of them looked like.
We mentioned the Jays and Yankees have today off. Yeah, I know that. You couldn't even remember your first home run. You got no idea who you hit your first home run off of in the minors, do you?
No. I mean, to my defense, Jeff, it was almost 300 of them. Like I mean, Crash Davis a little.
I know. I'm still trying to figure out the whole thing. You never hit a walk-off.
I know, right? Ever. And I played winter ball.
You must have walked off with a single, though, or something like
that. Never.
Not
a single, not a homer, not a walk.
Oh, come
not
on.
Not a pass ball. No, nothing. Jeez. Nothing. I didn't get the Barry Bonds bases loaded.
Nah, I just, you know. I figured ball hits your ass or something with the bases loaded. And...
No, I was diving out of the way.
All right. Well, anyhow, there you go. See, I've been with you for like 4 years. And
how about that?
I keep learning stuff. Ross Atkins is general manager of the undefeated Toronto Blue Jays.
How about that?
And he joins us on Baseball Central. Ross, thanks for taking time out today to talk to us. Look, you know, Kevin and I were kind of rehashing yesterday's win. Great infield defense. Teoscar Hernandez, really nice approach in that home run. You know, Hyunjin Ryu pitched well. The bullpen was lights out. When you went home last night and thought about that game, was there one aspect in particular that gave you more satisfaction than the other?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Good to hear your voices, Jeff and Kevin. I think you touched on it. It was the defense. It was, you know, all the work that has gone in, knowing the guys that were there every single day during spring training with defense at the forefront for some aspect of their day, and taking, whether it had been at the very start with Marcus Semien and Bo and Kevin Biggio at 8 in the morning out there every day with Louis Rivera because of the positional changes for Marcus and Kevin, to see that play out the way it did in day one, the exceptional plays that were made by all three of them, was I was really happy for them and happy for Blue Jays fans as well. Teoscar made a couple of great running catches, and overall, just our defense. Jano did an incredible job behind the plate. So those were the things that stood out, but I could keep going. There was a lot of positives.
Okay, Ross, I want to ask you big picture. You know, besides making the playoffs and obviously winning a World Series, this year, end of the year, you and Mark are sitting around. What would you be happy about this team? What would make you very happy other than the obvious ones?
Well, those would be them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, anything short of that, you know, we're not feeling like we accomplished our goals. At the same time, you know, we know we are making steps and incremental steps to become a sustainable winning team. And we have to find the small wins, and we have to find, you know, progress and identify progress and let people know when they're doing a good job. You can't just say that if we don't win the World Series, that it was a failure. So it's a fair question. But if it's framed as happiness, it is definitely, that's going to be the only thing where we sit back for and reflect for, you know, a day or two before we get back to work. But as you guys know very well, there's no rest in these jobs, and we embrace that aspect of it.
Now, I know that you were asked this question earlier in your conference call, but I thought the answer was really interesting. And I think, you know, listeners would be intrigued in this as well, about this as well, because of how we saw that game end, yesterday with Julian Merriweather coming very, very close to an immaculate inning. I'll ask you the same question I asked Kevin. Is there a pathway here for Julian Merriweather to become the closer, or do you think, Ross, that we are more than likely, and I'm not just talking about tomorrow, but down the road, still thinking of Romano, Dolis, and Merriweather in some form? And I'm not complaining about that. If it's going to work out the way it did yesterday, believe me, I'm not complaining. But can you see that happening eventually?
Yeah, it's listen, there's a pathway for it, sure. It's interesting to see how that takes shape. There is the bullpen. There's one thing for sure. The thing you have to have is options, because the demands on relievers, we talk about it all the time, internally, externally. It is a very interesting part of the team, of the game, really, in the industry, just how relievers are used, how they are, what the demand is on them, how they're compensated in different ways, where their trajectory is relative to position players, even starting pitchers, the health dynamic of it, the increased velocity, the increased swing and miss rates. So there's so many variables there. And what we want to do is keep as many of those guys as we can in good positions to be successful, to be helpful, and healthy and to be resilient. So having options is the only way to do those things. So, the injury we had early on to Kirby Yates was a big blow, but having the names that you mentioned, we knew that we were still in a relatively strong position, and we'll continue to push there to think about alternatives that we can either add externally or as guys continue to improve internally. Really excited about Patrick Murphy and some of the others that have shown a lot of promise this year already on our 40 men.
Does it help that I would think at least guys understand leverage now? Guys have come up through the minors. Guys are in the major leagues. And when a manager talks to them about high leverage situations or leverage in general, it registers, right? It's become part of the vernacular. It's not as foreign as it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. There's several factors there, too, because I think another significant component is focusing on winning. And if your environment where you have a player like Marcus Semien who's coming in and says, yeah, I'll play second base. I want to be a part of a team that I feel is going to be a contending one and is going to win. And I'm excited about that challenge. And a player like Kevin Biggio says, sure. And I'll go to third. And Robbie Ray, hey, if you guys want to use an opener in a playoff game, I'm fine with that. That mindset and that environment bodes well for players being a bit more open-minded towards the traditional approach. And a lot of it is, as I mentioned earlier, how guys are compensated, how guys get compensated for saves, and that's a factor. So guys really being selfless about it and thinking, okay, how do I put myself in the best position to be successful and help the team win more than just one game is a good mindset. But it's complex, and it's an interesting and fascinating part of the game that we really enjoy here in Toronto.
Okay, yesterday Danny Jansen with Ryu, it just looked better. The optics of the whole thing, putting the fingers down, how confidence, how quick it was. His rhythm and timing with Ryu's a big deal. The amount of pitches he throws and where he throws them, and when it wasn't working, how he could get him back on track. But I got to ask you, offensively with Danny, what do you need to see this year from him with that?
What we've seen. He had great at-bats. He really did. I mean, he had incredible at-bats off Gerrit Cole, arguably the best pitcher in the game. Didn't get the bunt down, and that was his only poor at-bat of the day. He was right on some pitches, really good takes, really good professional approach where – if he's seeing 5 and 6 and 7 pitches and making contact, those are going to turn into hits. They're going to turn into doubles and home runs. We know he's going to get on base. So if he just keeps doing that, is more than enough.
Okay, we're seeing a lineup-wide two-strike approach. I have to ask, is that an organizational thing? Is that a Dante Bichette thing? And do you like where they're at when it comes to their, putting ball in play? It's bat-to-ball kind of thing.
Well, it's been a point of emphasis for us for a long time, and just how we can help guys take a more – every individual is different, and we don't want to have one philosophy on hitting. We don't believe in that. But what we do believe in is making it harder for the pitcher, and we did that yesterday. And we've talked about that. We've thought about that a ton, and now we're seeing it happen and play out at the major league level where, it's much like the teams of – 2013 to 2017, the Toronto Blue Jays offenses, where there wasn't a lot of rest for her starting pitchers, regardless of how good they were. And we saw that again yesterday with one of the best pitchers in the game. And here we are in the fifth inning, and he's coming up on his pitch count. And it's because of at bats that guys had where they're taking really good sliders and they're ready for the pitch that's in the zone and willing to take, you know, Vladdy's at bats were probably some of the most powerful at bats of the day. He doesn't, you know, hit the front page of the sports page the next day because it's just a single and a walk, but huge, just absolutely huge at bats for us. And KO is the guy that ends up getting with also good at bats, but getting the production. But every one of those, as you know, Kevin, very well, the impact of that, the next hitter and how that impacts the starting pitcher is significant.
Ross, we know that Major League Baseball has started the process of have sent out some guidelines to teams and to players for vaccinations. And essentially they are going to reward teams that hit an 85% threshold. This is my wording. They're going to reward teams that have 85% of their players vaccinated by loosening some of the restrictions around gathering, around travel, family members, things of that nature. You guys are starting on the road. You go to Texas after you're finished in New York. What is the procedure going to be for Blue Jays players getting vaccinated? And if you could just tell us a little bit about the type of discussions, you know, you've had in that clubhouse.
Yeah, and it's not just me, but I'm having them too with just asking questions ourselves about what the thoughts are or the questions are of our players and staff as they consider having this in front of them as an alternative. And something that organizationally we do feel strongly about as it being something that's better for the organization, it's better for the communities that we're coming and going from, and certainly for the one that we're living in, but making it available to all of our players and families is a priority for us. We're fortunate in that Florida 18 and over will be available to anyone there on Monday. So the fact that we will be back there soon and have that available to our players and their families and our staff and their families in stages is an incredible stride in this pandemic that we've been living in. And as it relates to the players, it's a very personal and private decision. And they're focused on, fortunately, we feel as though our team is focused on just that. They're focused on the team. They're focused on more than just what it means for themselves. And, you know, hopefully that will result in us having those relinquished protocols because we've gotten to that threshold.
Would you anticipate that players would be vaccinated in stages so that, you know, you don't have 26 players getting vaccinated in one day and four of them coming down with, you know, anything coming down, just not feeling good because of the effects of the vaccine?
Yeah.
Will this be done in stages?
It will be done in stages. And then because of the availability of it in Florida, we'll be able to not just make it available in stages and seamless for them, but it will remain available to them. So, you know, on a more individual level, but again, it's such a personal decision, but we feel very good about the dialogue around it with our team. So we'll remain hopeful there.
Okay, Ross, before we let you go, can you give us an update on Robbie Ray, Nate Pearson, George Springer, and Thomas Hatch, if you don't mind?
Yeah, Kev. So basically, with George, we're very encouraged. I think if we were playing in a playoff game this week, we would probably be able to manage him getting into the game and maybe with some rest and recovery play on a relatively regular basis. So that's a great starting point. We just felt as though it was best to have him start the season at 100% so that we weren't potentially having a negative setback or you know, asking him to play with something that continued to nag him. So he is pain-free, symptom-free at this point, and we'll start with really regular baseball activity and live interactions with pitchers here this weekend. Robbie Ray is off the mound already, 100% pain-free and symptom-free and free and easy. So each step of that way is more encouraging for us. And because he's not missing too much time, could become a starting option here and we'll see in and around days or a week or so, but really depends on how each step goes. Thomas Hatch is now throwing again and feeling very good, also symptom free, very strong. And Nate Pearson's in a great spot, already off a mound today. Really feels encouraged about some of the progress he's made, the lack of symptoms he's had, and some potential small adjustments he can make to ensure we're doing whatever we can to prevent that from happening again. So we've really had a really positive week with regards to their progress on all four of those individuals.
Ross, I just have one quick question before I let you run. A player you know very well, Francisco Lindor, he has signed a big contract with the Mets. We know that David Fletcher, I believe, has agreed to deal or signed a deal with the Angels. You've got, obviously, players like Bo and Cavan and Vladdy. I'm just wondering if there's any, what this organization's philosophy is going to be this year about talking to these players about, some sort of long-term or multi-year contract.
Yeah, it's such a good position for us and those players to be in. They have worked so hard to be in a position now where they've turned themselves into a great unit and a team. They're excited about playing together with one another. They love the city to a man. They absolutely love Toronto, love Canada, love playing here, have embraced the acquisitions well, and seemingly are extremely motivated to be a part of this for more than just the duration of their arbitration years. So, we will remain motivated on that as well, and our philosophy is really simple. It's try our hardest to share risk with those as we think about extensions. And if that lines up, awesome. And if not, we totally understand. So we'll always, have open dialogue in and around how we could potentially share those risks with any individual as we think about building the best possible team we can.
Ross, good stuff. Really appreciate you doing this today. Enjoy the day off and stay safe and be well.
Yeah, thanks, Ross.
Okay, Jeff. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. That is Ross Atkins, Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays have today off. They'll be back at it tomorrow afternoon in the Bronx, back in the Bronx Sunday, then to Texas to take on the Texas Rangers. So, boy, if you're the Los Angeles Dodgers, you're looking at what happened last night and you're wondering, I think a lot of us thought that 2020 was the year of weirdness and that 2021 was going to be a little more normal. If you're the Dodgers right now, you're probably trying to figure out what exactly happened last night on the Cody Bellinger home run, single, whatever it was. We'll walk you through it. And Mr. Barker has some suggestions for coaches and young players as to how to not find yourself in the embarrassing position that the Dodgers found themselves in last night. We'll talk about it. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, so here's what happened last night at Coors Field. It's a third inning, the Rockies and the Dodgers. Justin Turner is on first base. Raimel Tapia's in left field for the Colorado Rockies. And Cody Bellinger launches a ball to the left field wall, and it is gone. Tapia leaps up. The ball comes out of his mitt. Dude in the stand, fan in the stands does a great job. He just picks up the ball like it's no big deal. Nobody knows where the ball is, including Justin Turner. So Turner obviously thinks the catch is made. He runs past second base while the ball is still in the air. Now he's going back to first, and he waves at Cody Bellinger as he goes back to first base. You can't do that. You can't pass the base runner. So, well, Derek, the Dodgers broadcast crew is among the best in the game. They had it all figured out. I'm not even going to buy. They had it figured out right from the get-go, I think.
It turns out to be a solo blast. Muncy takes a walk after the home run by Bellinger. The Dodgers take a 1-0 lead.
Oh, now they're getting a different story.
Taylor takes a strike on the inside corner, 2-2.
So hold your horses. You can still go to our friends at Daniels. But now it's scored a single by Bellinger. Turner scores.
Really? I'm sure
so
there's...
Bellinger would have been ruled out for passing Turner, although it wasn't Bellinger's fault. Turner just was sprinting past him.
So Bellinger a single. Turner scores.
Turner scores. And how many people besides myself are looking at the rule book?
So Turner scores. Bellinger a single. And how do you score that in the book?
Delicately.
As Charlie Steiner tried to explain that play. So what happens is it is ruled a single, and Justin Turner scores. Should have been a home run. Should have been a two-run home run, yeah? What went wrong there, Kevin Barker?
Well, it's just another example of how bad base running is at the big league level. It is very high school-esque.
It's a lost art.
A lot of the time. Art's a strong word. They just rarely practice it. When's the last time you're at a spring training game and you saw them seriously running bases? I'm not talking about that little shuffle, and let's take a jog from first to
third.
Let me
tell you
something. About that.
Do you remember sliding pants? Did you have sliding pants?
Of course I did.
Guys used to do base running drills, and they put sliding pants
not
on, so guys
leagues.
Wouldn't get hurt. No, but in the minors. No, but they used to do it in the minors. Anyhow.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, it's a lost fundamental, not maybe more than a lost art. Anyhow, tell me about this, because I'm watching this.
It is. Okay, Justin Turner did everything right. You know, when a ball's hit, you run as hard as you can. You're watching the play. The one thing he did not do right is when the play is right in front of you and you're rounding second base, he stopped, saw the play, thought it was an out, put his head down, turned his back to the play, rounded second, and took off to first. It's base running 101, especially when the play is right in front of you. Even more reason to do what I'm going to tell you to do. If you round the first base bag and a ball that's hit into the outfield in front of you and you're not sure if it's caught, especially when it's that far away. You know, Tapia is a left-handed thrower, means his glove is on his right hand. Mm-hmm. That means his glove would have went over the fence and down behind the fence a little bit. So it's right. Very hard for a base runner to see his glove. When in doubt, freeze. Stop. Keep your eyes on the play. Shuffle while your eyes are still on the play. Shuffle back to second.
To the closest base, right? To
exactly
second base.
Exactly right. Stay on second base until you find out whether he caught it or he didn't catch it. How many times have you ever seen a guy rob a homer, land on the ground, throw a BB to the cutoff guy. The cutoff guy throws a BB to whatever base to double off the guy. It's very, very rare. What usually happens?
Guy holds the ball. Look at me. I caught the ball.
Look what I caught. Then he turns around and chucks it towards the infield. You got infielders running towards the ball to try and get it, and it rarely turns into a double play.
Right.
When in doubt, stop, shuffle back to your bag with your eyes on the target. It is baseball 101. Now, this will have no bearing whatsoever on the outcome of the Dodgers season. They will still win 100-plus games, and they'll
like
be
them?
In the mix.
Yeah, you still like
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they're still going to, you know, overreact Friday kind of thing. But how you go back-to-back winning championships, you run the bases the right way.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the only time that somebody got thrown out at third base too. It's just doing the little things. It's going to the bases when you're supposed to and putting your head down and just basically running until you touch a bag. That's high school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you run the bases at the big league level. Always run with your head up, especially when plays are in front of you. Don't get in a hurry. If Tapia was to catch that throw to his target and they double you off, tip your hat to the guy and say, way to go. You just made an unbelievable play. But now you look like a high school player because you're just running all over the field and you have a guy that just hit a homer that ran right by you and you didn't even notice him because you had your head down looking at the ground. It was a... You know, it's a play that I'm sure Justin Turner
would like
to
forget. There's nothing the first base coach can do there, eh?
No. That's the big leagues. Yeah.
Everybody. No, I'm just asking because he's the other party there.
Every time that something happens on the bases, they want to blame the third base coach or the first base coach. The first base coach and the third base coach aren't the ones running.
Okay.
You have to take accountability for yourself. The play is right in front of you. Now, if that ball's hit the right field, he would have done that little turn, ran to second, stood on second, and looked at the right fielder.
Right.
Why is it any different when the play's right in front of you? I know he was running super hard and rounded second. Okay, no problem. Stop. Take a shuffle. Eyes on the play. Shuffle back to second base. Stand there. Wait to see what happens. If he catches it, you run to first. If he doesn't, it's a homer.
It's a home run, yeah.
It's real simple. It's just sometimes you see things. The best team in baseball, just sometimes with the way they run the bases, just make you scratch your head. Do you even work on things like this?
Yeah, the other thing I found interesting, too, is that everybody's looking at the umpire at that point in time. It's not the umpire. Yeah. At that point, it's not the umpire's call. The umpire's not responsible for telling you which base to go to.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of because the guy ran past the guy that hit the ball. Yeah. That was the whole thing on what's going on. Why are you making this kind of call? You know why? Nobody ever sees that. That's why you look around because you don't know what's going on because it never happens.
I mean, the weirdest thing I saw was a playoff game with the Mets. Robin Ventura hit a home run. It was a walk-off, but he didn't make it to second. He went to second base and then ran in and joined the pile.
Yeah.
And we were covering the game. We're sitting in the press box. We're waiting for an announcement. How do you score it?
Yeah.
How do you score it?
Yeah, I'll bet it never happens again. Usually it takes one time. It's like when I got yelled at third base for getting thrown out from Dante Bichette. Yep. You know, when somebody's yelling at you, you don't make that same mistake again.
Mr. Barker, this was a lot of fun. You will be back on Monday.
I appreciate that.
We'll have a little baseball for you. I think we have a two-hour. Do we have a two-hour pregame
we
Monday?
Do. Two
hours of baseball central on Monday ahead of the Jays and Texas. That game, by the way, is going to be played in front of 40-odd thousand fans.
How about that?
Been a while since I've seen that. Writer's block is next.